understand the premise behind principle number three. It's not about environments. It's more about you than it is the environment. And why do I say that? I got away from my parents' house, their rules, their regulations, and I had the fresh start I dreamed of when I moved in with Tim. But changing addresses, it didn't change. Listen to me. It did not magically change my situation. I ended up taking Tim for granted in the same way I took my parents for granted. Okay, I didn't wash dishes. I didn't clean up after myself. I had the same opportunity. Listen to me. I had the same opportunity my parents gave me. So it wasn't about an opportunity. I had the exact same opportunity, but I ended up making the exact same mistake because I always focused on everybody else, but I never focused on changing Eric Thomas. I was the classic Eric Thomas in Tim's home. And what do I mean by that? Same process, same exact outcomes. Eventually, just like I got kicked out of my parents' house, I got kicked out of Tim's house. So, principle number one, don't make a habit out of choosing what feels good over what's actually good for you. Principle number two, avoid being your own worst enemy. And finally, principle number three, you can change environments, but until you change yourself, nothing else will ever change.
Chapter 5. Where do I start? Though no one can go back and make a brand new start, anyone can start from now and make a brand new ending. Carl Bard.
As we go into the next few chapters, we're going to talk about change. And of course, for obvious reasons. Because if there's one lesson we can take away so far, it's that change does not happen by osmosis. All right, so I want to do you guys a favor. I want to demystify the concept of change. Why? Because too often I hear individuals speak about change as if it's something complex. You know, something that cannot be attained, something that's extremely complex. The truth is, change is simple. But it's not necessarily easy. So let me be the first to encourage you. If ET can do it, anybody can do it. Remember, the first thing we have to do is stop comparing change to some complex coordinates in the theory of atomic and molecular structure and dynamics. For real, guys, it's just not that deep. As a matter of fact, change is so simple that even a child can do it. Principle number four, learn to be curious. Symbolically, when I look at change and I think about the initial process, I think about the genie in the bottle story. The story begins with a scared, angry young man walking up and down the beach. While walking, he notices a beautiful golden bottle. His curiosity drives him to move closer. As he gets closer, he bends down and he picks up the bottle. Once in his hands, he begins to rub it. And to his surprise, boom, the genie appears.
Thank you for setting me free. For thousands of years, I have been trapped inside this bottle, just waiting to be released to share with someone, anyone, the secrets to success. And to show you my appreciation, well, young man, you may ask for anything, anything, and your wish is my command.
Look, don't miss the message. For many of us, our change has been bottled up for years. I believe within every person is the capacity for change. Furthermore, I believe every individual at some point in his or her life has had multiple opportunities to change. There's a problem, though. The reality is many of us don't even recognize the need for change or understand the principles needed to create the kind of change we want to see in our lives. For example, one group of individuals, they think they don't even need to change, that everybody else needs to change. And then the second group, they believe that change is connected to location. You know, only if they could relocate, only if they could move to another city, another state, or even country, life would be so much better. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to use the story of the genie to reveal some of the most vital secrets to unleashing the power of change in your life. Principle 5, don't be afraid to explore your curiosity. What if I told you that the first step in experiencing real success didn't require any painstaking effort at all? That's right, for real. What if I told you the first step in the process only required a little exploration of curiosity? Look, guys, I studied this. For real, and Webster defines curiosity as a strong desire to know or to learn something. I know, it sounds too good to be true, but honestly, for real, the day my luck and my life changed for the better, it had absolutely nothing to do with effort. Before I left home now, that's a different story. Before I left home, I was minding my own business, and I was living life the best way I knew how to live it, when all of a sudden, I found myself sleeping in abandoned buildings, eating out of garbage cans, and stealing from the local grocery store. I remember thinking to myself, man, I don't know how I got here, and I damn sure don't know how I'm going to get out of this. In my distress, a thought popped in my head. Eric, what would have to happen in order for you to get out of this mess? I spent the next few days just thinking about it, trying to figure out in my mind, like, what would it take for me to get from this point in my life to where I knew I was destined to be? Look, guys, follow the story carefully. It was curiosity and curiosity alone that drove that scared, angry young man toward the beautiful bottle. And it was the exploration of desire that caused him to rub it. As a result, the genie was set free and the scared, angry young man was thrust into his new season. Pay attention to the initial exchange between the young man and the genie. Nowhere in the story, nowhere does the genie ask for a large sum of money or even a small down payment to activate the change process. Now, let me be honest with you. That's not my experience, right? Every time I've wanted anything, it costs money. You need money to buy a home. You need money, listen to me, to drive that car off the lot that you've wanted so bad. All the genie asked him for was to make a wish. The genie's job was not to paint a picture of what the man's life would look like for him. No, the genie understood that the young man's destiny was already inside of him. He didn't need a handout. He needed someone to challenge him, to get him out of that which he already had inside. Everything you need to get where you need to be is already inside you. But without a strong desire, and I stress a strong desire, to know or to learn something, we will never experience the change we desperately want to see. Principle 6, you have to saddle your dreams before you can ride them. I got so excited, guys, that I kind of gave away the next point, which is my favorite. Ask for anything you desire, and your wish is my command. This principle is one of my favorite success principles because it single-handedly placed me in a position of greatness. Through this principle, I was able to go from rock bottom, sleeping in abandoned buildings and eating out of trash cans, to making all my dreams become a reality. The thing I love most about this principle is that it requires nothing more than a healthy imagination. You don't have to be a genius or intellectually advanced to experience change. In fact, when I began this process over 25 years ago, it was the worst academic year of my life. Remember, I was a high school dropout. But change does not require intellectual ability. All change requires is strong desire. And once you get to a place in your life where you really want change to take place, really want change to take place, guess what? Boom! Your genie will appear and say, "Ask of me anything, and your wish is my command." And that's exactly what I did. I made a wish. I remember the day like it was yesterday, without a dime in my pocket or a place to go. I just sat there and I used my imagination. I imagined what my life would look like, what type of things I would have, what I would be, what I would be doing. And even today, I recall some of those moments as some of the most amazing moments in my life. In those few precious moments, I was no longer homeless. No, instead, I lived in a beautiful ranch-style home with a loving family, a red picket fence, and it was near a gorgeous body of water. I couldn't figure out what I was doing professionally, but in some capacity, I was helping people help themselves. My life was peaceful and drama-free. With desire and imagination, you can begin to live the life you've dreamt of your whole life. Let me explain the concept and how it works. Your imagination, it's like a GPS system. In order for any GPS system to work, you must first power it on. That's right, power it on. I don't care how basic of a model or how complex your GPS system is. It does not work if you don't turn the power switch to on. But once you've powered it up, get ready. The only thing left to do before your GPS takes you exactly where your heart desires is to select a POI. That's right, a point of interest, or provide an address. Bottom line, I use my imagination to rewrite the script of my life and begin heading in a new direction. Let's stop and let's do an imagination exercise I call, "Can you see what I see?" First, I want you to ask yourself a very, very important question. What do you want your life to look like? The operative question is, what do you want? Simple. What do you want? The question is not, what does your life look like currently? I'm not interested. I'm not interested in that answer because it has absolutely nothing to do with the price of tea in China. All right, guys, listen to me closely for this exercise. And we're only focusing on this exercise. I need you to focus solely on what you want your life to look like in the future. I'm not concerned about your past. Listen to me. Now we're focusing in on your future. The key to this exercise is for you to use all of your creative energy on the rest of your life instead of wasting it on focusing on the things you cannot change. Note, there are no guidelines or rules to this exercise. It is your life. And more importantly, it's your imagination. You have the power to be as creative as possible. Okay, so remember, this is your life. You are the CEO, the CFO, the CIO, the COO. Listen to me, whatever O's you need to be, you are the executive director and the screenwriter of your life. So let's begin. Here are a few questions to help you start the process. 1, write your role in the movie. Who and what do you wish to be? 2, what are your goals and dreams? What time frame do you have for them? 3, what would your average day, week, or month look like if you were living out your dreams? Number four, what would be your major accomplishments in 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, or more? Number five, what type of legacy do you wish to leave behind for your family, your friends, and society as a whole? Number six, what type of wealth will you need to have to accomplish all your dreams? And number seven, what type of information or knowledge would you need to acquire the type of support you need to make your dreams become a reality? There are a million other questions you and I could have generated that would get our imagination juices flowing. The questions, however, in and of themselves are not as important as your responses. What you envision in your mind, how you see yourself, how you envision the world around you is of great importance, because those things and those things alone become your focus. They become the reason why you go to bed at 10 p.m. and wake up at 4 a.m. They become the reason why you work two jobs during the day and attend classes at night. They become the reason you make the sacrifices you make. In short, the things you desire to do, to have, and be provide you with the passion, the purpose, and the drive you need to succeed. This is why I say change is not complex. You can have good credit, bad credit, or no credit at all. And the change you so desperately need in your life can be as real as the sun is bright. The best of your life, listen to me, the best part of it all is that you do not need a cosigner for change. The best part of your life is within you. I don't care what people say about your breakthrough or what they think about your breakthrough. The only thing you need to get your breakthrough is a strong desire. It starts and it ends with you. It can start today. It can start now. You can begin to make the rest of your life the best of your life today. You can activate the process this very moment if and only if you have enough curiosity to ask yourself one simple question. What would it take to get from here, where I am now, to where I want to be? Or you can continue. Listen to me. You have the right to continue to live a life of lack and be envious of those around you because of what they have and what they enjoy every single minute of their lives. But you do not need to go to the beach to find a genie to do that. Your change, if you want change, real change, all you need to do is be daring enough to rub that bottle. No, I'm sorry, to rub your bottle and make your wish. And if you do that, everything you want to be, everything you want to have, everything you want to see can begin the day you have a strong desire to make your dreams become a reality. Summary, principles 4 through 6. Principle 4, learn to be curious. Principle 5, don't be afraid to explore your curiosity. Principle number 6, you have to saddle your dreams before you can ride them.
Chapter 6, When I Move, You Move. A year from now, you may wish you had started today. Karen Lamb.
I don't remember much about what I learned in middle school, especially not in science class. But I do recall a lesson that elaborated on the difference between potential energy and kinetic energy. See, potential energy is that energy that's stored into an object. If you stretch a rubber band, for instance, you will give it potential energy. And as the rubber band is released, potential energy is changed to motion. Now, kinetic energy is the energy of motion. When you are walking or running, your body is exhibiting kinetic energy. Potential energy is converted into kinetic energy. Before the yo-yo begins its fall, it has stored energy in relation to its position. At the top, it has its maximum potential. As it starts to fall, the potential energy begins to change into kinetic energy. At the bottom, its potential energy has been converted into kinetic energy, causing the yo-yo to reach its maximum kinetic energy. Based on my limited understanding of the scientific terminology used to explain this concept, my hypothesis is that desire and imagination can be classified as potential energy. Both desire and imagination are stored in the mind of the individual, but when stretched, both have the potential to position a person for greatness. Individually, neither is capable of producing any real outcomes. Thus, having a desire for change and dreaming about change is merely the initial stage of change. Essentially, what distinguishes potential energy from kinetic energy is 8 letters. MOVEMENT, movement. And those 8 letters that form the word movement are the exact same entity that separates the stagnant, those who are on the treadmill of life going nowhere fast, running in circles, experiencing one defeat after another from the more progressive, those walking in their anointing, living their purpose, and experiencing victory after victory. Look, having potential is imperative to success. But there is a time and season for everything. You can't afford to live in potential for the rest of your life. Look, at some point, you have to unleash the potential and make your move. Movement. Principle 7. Choosing friends is a matter of life and death. I once heard a wise man say, if you find yourself in a hole, the worst thing you can do is keep digging. I never thought I would say this, but being homeless turned out to be a blessing. It put me in a position that forced me to rethink some things, and it changed my perspective on life. For instance, living with my brother Tim, man, that seemed like the ideal thing to do when the thought of where I would find shelter initially popped in my head. Sometimes you have to be careful what you ask for because you just might get it. Like I said, living with Tim made sense at the time. It meant security. It meant not having to worry about having a roof over my head or dealing with some of the other challenges associated with being homeless. But there was one small problem. Living with Tim, it didn't help change my mentality or my attitude. Homelessness had the opposite effect. It didn't provide me with the luxuries I was accustomed to when I lived with my parents, but it sure did change my way of thinking. It lit a fire up under my butt that my teachers, my counselors, not even my parents could have managed to ignite. Homelessness stripped the immature, self-centered, nonchalant attitude right out of me and caused me to take life a lot more seriously. For instance, when I was homeless, I approached relationships entirely different. Pre-homelessness, was all about having fun. Nothing more, nothing less. I chose most of my friends based on proximity. You know, my friends lived in the same neighborhood, or we all attended the same school. I had no real formula for choosing my friends. You know, the people in my inner circle, other than having fun. But when I was homeless, I didn't live in a specific neighborhood. So choosing my friends was an entirely different story. The days of living life like it was a video game, those days were over. In the video game, the outcome of the gamer's decisions, it doesn't matter much. Whether the gamer wins or loses, he can always push the restart button. And the system will not only give him a new player, but a fresh start. It didn't take me long to figure out that on the street level, they weren't playing any games and that there was no restart button. You pay up front for every single decision. Life, yeah, it was for keeps. And I couldn't start over. And there was little to no room for errors. I had to grow up and grow up quickly. And one of the ways I changed my circumstance was to think long and hard about whom I call my friends. See, I had that Kevin Garnett mentality. I wasn't looking to leave Minnesota. I was just sick and tired of coming up short. And I needed desperately to surround myself with people who had that winner's mentality. I tasted my share of defeat, and I wasn't fond of the taste. I wanted to surround myself with the kind of people whom I could rub up against like iron sharpening iron. So my first move toward recovery was thinking methodically about the people whose paths I crossed that fit that description. It didn't matter if you went to elementary school with me, middle school with me, or high school. It didn't matter if you were black, white, green, or yellow. The only thing that mattered was digging myself out of that hole I was in. And the more I thought about it, the more one name kept popping up in my head. Robert Earl King, a.k.a. Bob B, or the Raw Babe. Which was weird, because of all the people I thought about, Bob was the person I knew least. See, I met Bob a year before I moved to Southfield Lathrop. We actually went to Henry Ford High School together. But with a student population of more than 2,000, it was easy not to know all your peers. I met Bob through a mutual friend, Michi. Michi and the whole Pearson crew got tired of Braille. Yeah, my homeboys spanking that tail in basketball and football every year. So Michi violated the neighborhood rules and recruited an outsider. See, the street rivalries dated back to the late 70s. Several rival streets got together during the year and played each other in all kind of sports. We called it the Street Wars. Before everyone started the violent movement of shooting and killing each other, we battled on the court and on the field. Our generation was stacked with talent. We had Lonzo, who was a year older than I was, and together we were a dominant force. So I didn't trip when Bob came on the scene because he raised the level of competition and he seemed like a pretty cool dude. On the court, we actually hit it off well. And as luck would have it, we were assigned to the same English class the next school year. Towards the end of the school year, we were just starting to develop our friendship when I moved to Lathrop. Once I moved to the burbs, our friendship ended, and even though only 4 miles separated us, I didn't see or talk to Bob until I thought about him that day. As I look back on my life, I can say that single most life-altering move, not desire, I made was reconnecting with Bob. My relationship with him confirmed what my parents have been trying to get me to understand for years. The people you associate yourself with have the greatest influence on your life. Your relationships will either make or break you, and there is no such thing as a neutral relationship. People either inspire you to greatness or pull you in the gutter. It's that simple. No one fails alone, and no one succeeds alone. When I reconnected with Bob, I felt as fortunate as KG, Kevin Garnett, when he left Minnesota for Boston. I, too, move beyond the thought of repositioning myself to actually taking the necessary steps to reposition myself and join a group of men that could help me compete for a championship. Time will not allow me to write about all the ways Bob helped me to climb from the bottom to the top. But I will share 6 lessons I believe are needed for those of you who are tired of hanging with scrubs and want to be in the winner's circle. Lesson 1. Look for people who believe in something and are passionate about their beliefs. Contrary to popular opinion, money, position, and power are not the true measure of success. Character is the foundation of all real success. Before I met Bob, I can honestly say that I never really thought about character. But even at a young age, Bob made character look appealing. He was the only popular Christian I knew, and he was one of the best rappers in the neighborhood. He was known for making dudes cry in the capping session, and the ladies loved him. Most of the Christians I met in school, they were lame. Every word that came out of their mouth was Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. But Bob, as a Christian, he had swag. However, swag was not what drew me to Bob. What drew me to Bob was the fact that Bob never compromised his beliefs. It didn't matter who you were or who you were with. Bob, man, he stood up for what he believed, and he did not change his beliefs for anyone. And I admired that about him, because I knew firsthand how easy it was at that young age to let peer pressure break you. I met so many fake people in high school, and on Sunday, they were up front row at church. They sang in the choir and probably taught Sunday school. They were raised in the church as good Christians. But as soon as they walked out of that front door, they tried to act like they were somebody they were not, just to be a part of the crowd. But Bob, he was just the opposite. I can't explain the feeling, but watching somebody keep it 100, man, that was empowering. Bob made standing up for what you believed in cool. And by making it cool, he unknowingly empowered me to want to do the same thing. I no longer felt obligated to downplay my personal beliefs in order to make other people happy. Through Bob, I learned to live out loud. See, I was still a virgin in high school, and I was proud of it. Back then, if someone questioned me about it, I would lie and act like, you know, I was some type of player. But deep down inside, the thought, man, just the thought of losing my virginity to a stranger, it just wasn't appealing. I wasn't a Christian, so it wasn't like I was trying to wait until I was married. I just didn't want to lose my virginity to someone I wasn't in love with. At the time, I was much more concerned about what others thought about me than I was about standing up for my own personal beliefs. Bob was instrumental, though. Yeah, Bob helped me overcome that. He helped me to understand the importance of character. Character isn't something that happens to you. With each decision that I made, I was consciously or subconsciously forming my character. Character is like my fingerprint. It identifies me from everyone else in the world. It says who I am and where I'm headed. Bob helped me realize that I had a choice and that I needed to exercise my choice. I was famous for saying that my teachers didn't like me, but not once did I ever question myself and ask myself why. Why did my teachers not like me? I was always the victim. I was always the one being picked on or judged by my teachers. It wasn't that my teachers didn't like me or that they were picking on me. It was the message I was conveying through my character, my mouth. Yeah, my mouth said I wanted to be in class and I wanted to learn, but my character was speaking so loudly the teachers couldn't hear a word I was saying. I was reaping what I had sown. It's a simple equation. You sow apple seeds, you get apple trees. Things change for the better when we take responsibility for our thoughts decisions, and actions. Lesson 2, be a giver, not a taker. It's one thing to have a friend. It's another thing to have a friend you can trust. You could put your wallet in Bob's back pocket and he would get it back to you first thing the next morning. Beyond that, Bob will give it back to you with some money in it. He was just that kind of guy. In fact, when I first reconnected with Bob, I didn't have a dime to my name, but Bob made sure I didn't want for anything. If Bob bought Better Made barbecue chips and a Faygo peach pop, I had Better Made chips and a Faygo grape pop. Peach was too strong for me. Bob's father was murdered when he was just 8 years old. I don't know the whole story. I just heard he was an addict and he got shot over something drug related. And because of his father's death, every month, Bob received a Social Security check. And I swear, whenever he got his check, it was like I got a check. If Bob had it, it didn't make a difference what it was. I had it. When Bob got his first car, yep, I had a car. And when I needed a ride to work, one or two things either happened. He either dropped me off, picked me up, or he let me borrow the car. See, Bob's clothes were my clothes, no strings attached. And the crazy part about it was, deep down inside, I kind of felt like he didn't do it for others, or for me, for that matter, with any alternative motives. I believe it was just his character. And because Bob was such a giver, I believe that's why he was so blessed. I remember Bob got drunk one night at a party and got into it with the wrong dudes. And one of those dudes pulled out a 38, aimed it at Bob, and emptied the chamber. I don't know exactly what happened that night. All I know is that Bob lived to tell the story. And the only thing that got shot was the windshield of the car. Another time, Bob was away for the weekend on the run. And while he was in the house, he said he noticed a cab car that kind of looked out of place. And when he told some of the homies, they dismissed it and said, it's just a cab, and that he was tripping. But Bob said his spirit told him something was wrong. And so he told the guys he was going to the corner store to get a bag of chips and a Faygo pop. And when he got back to the spot 15 minutes later, he saw police all over the place. He said he walked past the house, and sure enough, it was a full-blown raid. Bob, he said he walked right past the house. Yep, and the police never detected that he was in the crib. Lesson 3, always remain loyal. One of the things that my father stressed to me was the importance of being true to my word. He talked about a time when men didn't need contracts for every transaction. And that if a man gave his word by looking a person in the face and shaking his hand, the agreement was as good as gold. That was Bob. Bob was true to his word and truer to our friendship. When we first reconnected, Bob, man, he snuck me in his grandfather's house. Bob's older brother, Bill, however, he wasn't too happy about that. See, when Bob's father died, his grandfather took custody of Bob and his brothers, and he built a nice-sized room for the boys in the basement. The room had two sets of bunk beds in it. I slept under Bob's bed on the floor. This sounds uncomfortable, but it beat sleeping outside. Bill was pissed off, because the way he looked at it was, there was already four boys sharing one basement. So after about a week, he snitched. But see, he told his step-grandmother, whom he didn't really get along with, but he knew. He knew if he told Grant, Grant was not about to put me out on the streets. Bob was pissed when he found out what happened. And even though Bill was his bigger brother, Bob's loyalty to me never changed. See, he spoke with his grandfather and he let him know if he can't sleep in the basement, he was going to let me stay in Bill's K car, which had recently been in an accident. Whatever his step-grandmother cooked for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, Bob made sure I got a plate. In the morning, he would unlock the car door, and let me take a hot shower. If you looked up the word loyal in the dictionary, you would probably see a picture of my boy Bob. I learned that a real friendship is not about what you can get, but about what you can give. Real friendship is about making sacrifices and investing in people to help them improve their lives. Lesson 4. Maintain a positive outlook. I am a firm believer that a person does good when he feels good. A lot of people like to downplay the power of thinking positively and being a positive person. But being around Bob, it convinced me that there is real power in positivity. I don't care what the weather was or what the day of the week was, Bob kept a smile on his face and a song in his heart. No matter what the circumstances were, Bob had a positive outlook on life. And whenever I was in his presence, man, I would forget I was homeless. I think the fact that Bob had been through his own personal struggles and managed to keep his head up and remain positive made his witness that much stronger. He wasn't some kid born with a silver spoon in his mouth, but he used the principles of positivity to get him through all his struggles. See, Bob lived in a 3-bedroom house with his 4 brothers, his grandparents, and his stepmother's 3 daughters. His grandfather was the sole breadwinner for the household. And to further complicate matters, Bob's biological mother was a substance abuser who was in and out of he and his brother's lives. But no one would have ever known that my boy Bob wasn't born in royalty. He walked like it. He talked like it. He carried himself like it. And he forced the people who knew and loved him to treat him like it. And it was that bravado that transformed my thinking and gave me energy to keep pressing toward my goals. After being in his presence, I was convinced that positive people enjoy certain luxuries. They experience deeper joy and they go through less stress than pessimistic people do. Through Bob, I learned to look at hardships as learning experiences. And even on the most miserable day, I could hold the promise that tomorrow is a new day that promises to be better. Lesson 5. Never underestimate the power of words. I truly believe that life and death are in the power of the tongue. I believe we have to be very careful about the messages we allow to enter our minds and the messages we convey to others, because words have so much power. I am a living witness that words that are spoken to you can bring forth life to your soul or death to your soul. I know this firsthand to be true because Bob's words coached me back to life. I remember Bob talking to me about some college down south called Oakwood. He was so adamant and excited about it. Later, I found out that he had never even visited the school. He talked about how he thought it was the perfect college for me and that he thought I should go and study ministry. After Bob got me all excited, I found some literature on the school at church and began dreaming about the possibility of going there someday. I learned from Bob the power of words and how they can influence your life. There have been times in my life when close family members and friends spoke words that crushed me. You are going to be just like your biological father. You'll never qualify for that. Or you're not smart enough to do this or that. Words in the hands of the wrong people can not only crush your spirit, but they can also derail your dreams, skew your self-image, and hurt your heart. Bob's words of life brought me back in touch with the 2 most critical relationships in my life today. The first one was with the first real relationship with a female, and the second one was my relationship with Jesus Christ. Lesson 6. A true friend respects your values. Unfortunately for Bob and I, the church, it wasn't the only environment in which we spent quality time. As we got older, we spent more of our time hanging out on Mark Twain and Schoolcraft and less time on 7 Mile and Trinity. Even though the two were close in proximity, they were like worlds apart. See, Detroit in the late 80s was a weird city because one block could totally define what type of social economic status a person experienced. The houses on the deep west side of Detroit looked well manicured. They were made with beautiful red brick, had manicured lawns and new cars in the driveway. If a person traveled further toward the east, he became more aware of the realities of poverty in an industrial powerhouse. When I use the term poverty, it's much deeper than just living below the nation's poverty line. Poverty was a mindset. For the first time in my life, I was fully exposed and experiencing the realities of poverty and a poverty mindset. See, I had family members who lived in Cabrini Green, in Chicago's housing complex, and some lived in the Herman Gardens housing complex in Detroit, Michigan. So I had spent the night at my grandmother's and my aunt's house on a regular basis and even hung out with my cousins in the projects. So I experienced poverty, but never a poverty mindset. But gradually, the street values began to have a heavy influence on Bob and myself. Bob more so than me because Mark Twain was his old stomping ground. Eventually, Bob started drinking, smoking, and hustling. I was more into the apparel game and gambling. I helped my customers purchase name brand apparel at discount prices. I would go to the mall of their choice, find their items, steal the merchandise, and sell it for 50% off the retail price. I always appreciated the fact that Bob did not pressure me into smoking and drinking. When the guys rolled up the tops and began passing the joint, Bob would say, "Don't pass that joint to E. Y'all know E don't smoke." Even as far as the ladies were concerned, Bob knew I was a virgin, but he never joked on me about it or tried to convince me that I needed to change my conviction. If I wasn't feeling it, Bob never pressured me on the issue or used his leverage in our friendship to manipulate me. Summary. Principle 7. Choosing friends is a matter of life and death. Lesson 1. Look for people who believe in something and are passionate about their beliefs. Lesson 2. Be a giver in a relationship, not just a taker. Lesson 3. Always, and I do mean always, remain loyal. Lesson 4. Maintain under all circumstances a positive outlook on life. Lesson 5. Never, ever, ever underestimate the power of words. And lesson 6. A true friend respects your values.
Chapter 7. Go where you're celebrated, not tolerated. If you associate yourself with eagles, you will learn to soar to great heights. Author unknown.
I think I made it quite obvious why it's so important to surround yourself with the right people. I mean, see, it's real basic. Your destiny and your dynasty is determined or demolished by those closest to you. And now that we've established the need for you to take a thorough look at those you have selected in your Fab Five or in your inner circle, it's time to take the next step towards your success. And that, my friend, is taking a close look at your environment. Here's the question you need to ask yourself. Is this soil the ideal environment for the type of harvest I'm expecting to gain? Again, listen to me. I need you to ask yourself this question. Seriously, is this soil the ideal environment for the type of harvest I'm expecting to gain? See, when I was a young man, my mother had a garden that I was equally responsible for. My mother taught me several things that I needed to take into consideration before planting my seed in any dirt. First and foremost, she said, you need to examine the dirt. You need to be certain to identify the best soil type for the growth of your seed. Next, Mom told me that I needed to select the dirt that was disease-free and that contained enough nutrients to feed that particular seed. Let me say this to you. For those of you who want success, you should think like a planter. They should understand that having the right seed is, yes, an essential key to success. But they must also understand that the soil they entrust to the seed is just as vital. Those who understand this concept realize that the operative word for planting is not growth. Growth can and will happen in most environments. The operative word is type. See, in the initial season, the success seeker is not anticipating just growth. Instead, he should search for the proper environment for the growth to take place. Can you honestly say the environment or environments you are in will yield the kind of harvest you are expecting? If not, then you might want to get in position to reposition yourself. And that's what I did. That's exactly what I did over 20 years ago. I repositioned myself. See, one day Bob came to me and he said he was going to give me an opportunity of a lifetime. He said it was only under one condition. I had to be ready to get ready. And although it was a great offer, he said he wouldn't make the proposition if I wasn't ready for it. It took me about 2 months to clear my head and finally make the decision to take Bob up on his offer. He offered me the opportunity to come and visit the environment that made him the person he was, his church. I thought changing my circle of influence had improved my life, but then when I was exposed to the environment that made Bob into the person he was, I knew I had an upgrade. See, the crazy thing is this, that my growth had nothing to do with the church itself. My growth was connected to the environment the church produced. The church, it was only a tiny little storefront church on Puritan and War with less than 100 members. But sometimes looks can be deceiving. Bigger is not necessarily better. See, the Detroit Center Church created the type of environment that could reform. I'm talking about the most rebellious, the most immature, and the most misguided young person in the entire world. I know. I know what you're thinking. How soon can I pack up my bags or my kids' bags and turn my 2-week notice in and relocate to the west side of Detroit? Listen to me. There's no need to go to such drastic measures. I'm going to share the top 4 methods the Detroit Center Church used to help reform my life and prepare me for greatness. Principle number 8, the right environment is pivotal to your success. Embrace environments that positively contribute to your growth. Man, it hurts just thinking about that Final Four game. It was the NCAA road to the Final Four. And as you know, 64 teams entered the tournament. And somehow my team, man, they managed to survive and compete for the national title. But I got to be real, man. It was a nail-biting experience. And with less than 13 seconds on the clock, they were in striking distance. My team's opponent missed the free throw. The ball hit the back of the rim. My team got the rebound and headed down the court. And once they passed half court, the forward, he dribbled the ball in the court. He went to the corner to set up a play. Got double teamed. And with no play open, and no help on the backside, his instincts kicked in, and he called a timeout. But as he